Chapter 48. Leaning on the Knife. Climbing out of the big copper tub with a length of white toweling wrapped around her head, Nynaeve dried slowly. The plump, gray-haired serving woman tried to dress her, but Nynaeve sent her away, ignoring the startled looks and protests, and did it herself with great care, examining the dark green dress with its wide collar of pale Merada lace in the tall, narrow stand mirror. Lan's heavy gold ring lay in her pouch, best not to think of that, alongside one of the twisted ring Tarangrial, and the great serpent gleamed golden around the third finger of her right hand. Her right hand. Best not to think of that either. The high ceiling was quite pleasantly painted in blue sky and white clouds, and if the furnishings stood on disconcertingly large gilded lion feet, and the slim bedposts and chair legs and everything else vertical had too much fluting and gilding for her taste, it was still a more comfortable room than she had stayed in for some considerable time. A pleasant room, moderately cool. What she was trying to do was calm herself. It did not work, of course. She had felt Sidar being woven, and as soon as she stepped from her bedchamber, she saw the ward against eavesdropping Elaine had made and tied off around the sitting room. Birgitta and Avienda were already there as well, all of them freshly scrubbed and dressed. In what Birgitta claimed was a rather ordinary arrangement here, four bedchambers flanked the one sitting room, which also had a ceiling painted as sky and clouds. Four tall arched windows opened onto a long balcony of white-painted wrought iron, so intricate they could peer down from it unseen at the Mulhara Square in front of the palace. A faint breeze stirred through the windows, carrying the salt scent of the sea, and for a wonder it actually was a little cool. Anger interfered with her concentration, and Nynaeve had been feeling the heat since shortly after arriving in the Tarasin Palace. Tom and Julin had been given a room somewhere deep in the servants' quarters, which in truth seemed to irritate Elaine more than it did either of the men. Tom had actually laughed, but then he could afford to. "Have some of this excellent tea, Nynaeve," Elaine said, laying a white napkin across gleaming blue silk skirts. Like everything else in the sitting room, her wide chair had gilded balls for feet, and more standing along the tall back above her head. Avienda sat by her side, but on the floor, legs folded beneath the skirt of a high-necked dress that almost matched the pale green tile. Her labyrinthine silver necklace went very well with the dress. Nynaeve did not think she had seen the Aiel woman sit in a chair once. People had certainly stared at her in those two inns. "Mint and cloudberries," Birgitta added to Elaine's offer, filling another delicate golden porcelain cup without waiting. Birgitta wore wide gray trousers and a short blue coat. She did wear dresses occasionally, but her taste made Nynaeve glad it was seldom. All three of them dressed and primped, and no one wanted them. The silver pitcher glistened damply, and the tea was cool and refreshing. Nynaeve admired Elaine's face, cool and dry. She herself already felt moist again despite the breeze. "I must say," she muttered, "I expected a different reception." "Did you really?" Elaine asked. "After the way Van Deen and Adelius treated us?" Nynaeve sighed. "Very well, then. I hoped. I am finally Aes Sedai, really Aes Sedai, and nobody seems to believe it. I truly hoped leaving Salidar would make a difference." Their meeting with Merlilla Siondevin had not gone well, their presentation to her, in truth. Van Deen's introduction had been almost perfunctory, and then they were dismissed, sent away so the real Aes Sedai could talk. Merlilla had said she was sure they wanted to freshen up, but it was a dismissal, with a choice of going like obedient accepted, or refusing like sulky children. Just remembering ruined all Nynaeve's attempts at calm. Sweat began to run down her face. Being sent away was not the worst of it, really. Merlilla was a slender, palely elegant Kyrianan, with glossy black hair and large, liquid eyes, a gray who looked as if nothing had ever surprised her, and nothing ever could. Only those dark eyes had gone wide when told Nynaeve and Elaine were Aes Sedai, and wider still on learning Egwene was the Ammerlin's seat. Birgitta as a warder clearly astounded her, though by that time she managed to hold her reaction to one stare and a brief tightening of her lips. Avienda came out of it the easiest. Merlilla gave her only a murmur about how much she would enjoy being a novice. Then came the dismissal, and a suggestion, more in the nature of a command, that they spend several days recuperating from the rigors of their journey. Nynaeve plucked her handkerchief from her sleeve and fanned her face uselessly with the lacy square. "I still think they're hiding something." "Really, Nynaeve," Elaine said, shaking her head. "I do not like how we're being treated any more than you, but you are trying to make a bull out of a mouse. If Van Deen and Adelius want to look for runaways, let them. Would you rather have them trying to take over looking for the bowl?" During the whole journey they had hardly mentioned the Turangreal they sought, for fear the pair would do just that. Whether they would have or not, Nynaeve still thought they were hiding things. Elaine just did not want to admit it. Adelius had not realized that Nynaeve had overheard that remark about looking for runaways once they reached Ebudar, and when Nynaeve asked whether they really expected to find any, Van Deen replied just a bit too quickly that they always kept an eye out for young women who had run from the tower. It did not make sense. No one had run away from Salidar, but novices did run sometimes. The life was hard, especially with years of obedience to look forward to before you could even think of thinking for yourself. And an occasional accepted who had begun to despair of ever reaching the shawl tried to slip away. Yet even Nynaeve knew that few made it off the island of Tarvalen, and almost all were dragged back. You could be put out at any time, for not being strong enough to go on, for refusing or failing your test for accepted, or the test for Aes Sedai that she and Elaine had slipped by, but leaving was never your decision unless you wore the shawl. So if successful runaways were so rare, why did Van Deen and Adelius think they might find one in Ebudar, and why had they shut up like mussels when she asked? She was afraid she knew the answer to the last anyway. Not tugging her braid required considerable self-control. She thought she was becoming better at that. "At least Matt finally knows where Aes Sedai," she growled. At least she could deal with him now. Let him try anything, and he would see what it was like being thumped with everything she could wrap a flow around. He had better. "Is that why you've been avoiding him like a Chelten flinching from the tax collector?" Birgitta asked with a grin, and Nynaeve felt her face coloring. She thought she had hidden her feelings better than that. "He is very irritating even for a man," Avienda murmured. "You must have traveled very far, Birgitta. You often speak of places I have never heard of. One day I would like to travel the wetlands and see all these strange places. Where is this Chelten, Chelta?" That wiped Birgitta's grin right off. Wherever it was, it might be dead 1,000 years, or since an earlier age altogether. Her and her slipping ancient places and things into the conversation. Nynaeve wished she had been there to see her admit to Egwene what Egwene already knew. Egwene had grown impressively forceful in her time with the Aiel, and put up with little she considered nonsense. Birgitta had actually come back looking chastened. Even so, Nynaeve liked Birgitta rather better than she did Avienda, who made her very uneasy at times with her hard stares and bloodthirsty talk. And however irritating Birgitta could be, Nynaeve had promised to help her keep her secret. "Matt threatened me," she said hurriedly. It was the first way that came to mind to divert Avienda, and the last thing she wanted anyone else to know. Her cheeks heated all over again. Elaine actually smiled, though she had the grace to hide it in her teacup. "Not like that," Nynaeve added, when Avienda began frowning and fingering her belt knife. The Aiel woman seemed to think the proper response to everything was a violent one. "It was just..." Avienda and Birgitta looked at her, all ears and interest. "He just said..." As she had rescued Birgitta, Elaine rescued her. "I really think that is enough about Master Cawthon," Elaine said firmly. "He is only here to pull him out of Egwene's hair, and I can puzzle out what to do about the Turangreal later." Her lips compressed for a moment. She had not been happy when Van Deen and Adelius began channeling at Matt, without so much as a by your leave, and even less when he slipped off to that inn. There had been nothing she could do, of course. She claimed that by only telling him to do what he had to do anyway in the beginning, she could bring him into the habit. Well, good luck to her. "He is the least important part of this trip," she said, even more firmly. "Yes," Nynaeve just kept the relief out of her voice. "Yes, the bowl is what's important."
"I suggest I scout about first," Birgitta said. "Ebu Dar seems rougher than I remember, and the district you describe could be rougher than—"
She did not quite glance at Avienda.
"Than the rest of the city," she finished with a sigh. "If there is scouting to be done," Avienda put in eagerly, "I wish to be part of it. I have a cut in sore."
"A scout is supposed to blend in," Elaine said gently. "I think we should find Ebu Dari dress for all of us. Then we can all search together from the start, and none of us will stand out. Though Nynaeve will have the easiest time of it," she added, smiling at Birgitta and Avienda. The Ebu Dari they had seen so far all had dark hair, and most seemed to have nearly black eyes. Avienda exhaled glumly, and Nynaeve felt like echoing her, thinking of those deep necklines. Very deep, however narrow. Birgitta actually grinned. The woman had no shame at all. Before the discussion could go any further, a woman with short black hair, in the livery of House Mitzobar, entered without knocking, which Nynaeve thought rude no matter what Elaine said was proper for servants. Her dress was white, the skirt sewn up the knee on the left side to expose a green petticoat, with a snug bodice embroidered on the left breast with a green anchor and sword. Even the livery's narrow neckline plunged as far as Nynaeve recalled. Plump, and somewhere in her middle years, the woman hesitated, then curtsied and addressed herself to everyone.
"Queen Tylin wishes to see the Three-Eyes Sedai, if it pleases them."
Nynaeve exchanged wondering looks with Elaine and the others.
"There are only two of us Eyes Sedai here," Elaine said after a moment. "Perhaps you meant to go to Merlilla?"
"I was directed to this apartment, Eyes Sedai."
The pause was barely long enough to notice, and the woman just missed turning the title into a question. Elaine rose, smoothing her skirts. No stranger would suspect that that smooth face hid anger, but there was a hint of tightness at the corners of eyes and mouth.
"Shall we go, then? Nynaeve? Avienda? Birgitta?"
"I am not Aes Sedai, Elaine," Avienda said, and the serving woman put in hurriedly, "I was told only the Aes Sedai."
"Avienda and I could have a look around the city while you see the queen," Birgitta said, before Elaine could open her mouth.
Avienda's face lit up. Elaine gave the pair of them a sharp look, then sighed.
"Well, at least be careful. Nynaeve, are you coming? Or do you want to see the city, too?"
That last was in a dry tone, with another glance at Birgitta.
"Oh, I would not miss it," Nynaeve told her. "It will be good to finally meet someone who thinks—"
She could not finish it with the maid there.
"We should not keep the queen waiting."
"Oh, no," the liveried woman said. "It'd be as much as my ears are worth."
However much her ears were worth, it took some time to walk through the palace corridors. As though to make up for all the white outside, the palace was full of color. In one corridor, the ceiling was painted green and the walls blue. In another, the walls were yellow and the ceiling pale rose. The floor tiles were diamonds of red and black and white, or blue and yellow, or almost any combination in any shade. There were very few tapestries, usually scenes of the sea, but a good many tall vases of golden sea-folk porcelain stood in arched niches, and also large pieces of carved crystal, statuettes, and vases and bowls that caught Elaine's eye as well as Nynaeve's. Of course, servants scurried about everywhere, the men's version of the livery entailing white breeches and a long green vest over a white shirt with wide pleated sleeves. But before they had gone very far, Nynaeve saw someone striding toward them who made her stop and catch Elaine's arm. It was Jakim Caradin.
She did not take her eyes off the tall, graying man as he strode on past them, those cruel, deep-set eyes never turning in their direction, white cloak spreading behind him. Sweat covered his face, but he ignored it as he ignored them. "What is he doing here?" Nynaeve demanded. That man had unleashed slaughter in Tanchico, and the light only knew where else. The serving woman looked at her quizzically. "Why, the Children of the Light sent an embassy, too, months gone. The Queen, Aes Sedai?" Again that hesitation. Elaine managed to nod graciously, but Nynaeve could not blank the asperity from her own voice. "Then we should not keep her waiting." One thing Merlilla had let slip about this Tylin was that she was a punctilious woman, stiffly formal. But if she, too, started doubting they were Aes Sedai, Nynaeve was in just the mood to prove it. The serving woman left them in a large room with a pale blue ceiling and yellow walls, where a row of tall, triple-arched windows gave onto a long, wrought-iron balcony and let in a quite comfortable salty breeze. And before the queen, Nynaeve and Elaine made their curtsies, proper for Aes Sedai to ruler, a slight dip, a tiny bow of the head. Tylin was a most impressive woman. No taller than Nynaeve, she stood with a regal bearing that Elaine would have had to strain to match on her best day. She should have replied to their courtesies with the same, but she did not. Instead, her large black eyes examined them with imperious intensity. Nynaeve returned the favor as well as she could. Waves of glossy black hair, gray at the temples, hung well below Tylin's shoulders, framing a face that was handsome if not unlined. Shockingly, there were two scars on the woman's cheeks, fine and so old they had all but vanished. Of course, she did have one of those curved knives stuck through a belt of woven gold, with hilt and scabbard encrusted in gems. Nynaeve was sure it must be for show. Tylin's blue silk dress was certainly nothing anyone could wear fighting a duel, with falls of snowy lace that would nearly hide her fingers if she lowered her hands, and skirts drawn up above her knees in front to expose layers of green and white silk petticoats, and trailing behind her a pace or more. The bodice, trimmed in the same lace, was snug enough that Nynaeve was not sure whether sitting in it or standing would be more uncomfortable. A collar of woven gold fastened around the gown's high neck, which put more lace under her chin, supported a white-sheathed marriage knife, hanging hilt down into an oval cutout that easily equaled any of those deep necklines.
"You two must be Elaine and Nynaeve."
Tylin took a chair carved to resemble bamboo, though covered in gilt, and arranged her skirts carefully without taking her eyes from them. Her voice was deep, melodious, and commanding.
"I understood there was a third, Avienda."
Nynaeve exchanged glances with Elaine. There had been no invitation for them to sit, not so much as a flicker of eyes toward a chair.
"She is not Aes Sedai," Elaine began calmly.
Tylin spoke before she could say more.
"And you are? You've seen 18 winters at most, Elaine. And you, Nynaeve, staring at me like a cat with its tail caught. How many have you seen? 22? 23, perhaps? Stab my liver. I visited Tar Valon once, and the White Tower. I doubt any woman your age has ever worn that ring on her right hand."
26, Nynaeve snapped.
With a good part of the women's circle back in Emmons Field thinking she was too young to be wisdom, it had become habit with her to flourish every naming day she could claim.
"I am 26 and an Aes Sedai of the Yellow Aja."
She still felt a thrill of pride saying that. "Elaine may be 18, but she is Aes Sedai as well, and green Aja. Do you think Merlilla or Van Deen would let us wear these rings as a joke? A good many things have changed, Tylin. The Amarlin seat, Egwene Alvear, is no older than Elaine."
"Is she?" Tylin said in a flat voice. "I was not told that. When the Aes Sedai who counseled me from the day I took the throne and my father before me abruptly leaves for the tower without explanation, and I then learn that rumors of a tower divided are true, when dragonsworn seem to spring out of the ground,
when an Amyrlin is chosen to oppose Elida and an army gathered under one of the great captains inside Altara before I hear of it. When all of that has happened, you cannot expect me to be enamored of surprises."
Nynaeve hoped her face did not look as sickly as she felt. Why could she not learn to hold her tongue occasionally? Abruptly she realized she could no longer sense the true source. Anger and embarrassment did not go together very well. It was probably to the good. If she could channel, she might make an even bigger fool of herself. Elaine moved to smooth things over without a pause. "I know you have heard this before," she told Tylin, "but let me add my apologies to those of Merlilla and the others. Gathering an army inside your borders without your permission was unconscionable. All I can say in mitigation is that events moved quickly, and we in Salidar were caught up, but that is no excuse. I swear to you no harm is intended to Altara, and no insult was meant to the Throne of the Winds. Even as we speak, Garth Bryn leads that army north, out of Altara."
Tylin stared at her, unblinking.
"I have heard no word of apology or excuse until yours. But any ruler of Altara must learn to swallow insult from greater powers without salt."
Taking a deep breath, she gestured, Lace waving.
"Sit. Sit. Both of you sit. Lean back on your knife and let your tongue go free."
Her sudden smile was very close to a grin.
"I don't know how you say it in Andor. Be at ease, and speak your mind as you wish."
Nynaeve was glad that Elaine's blue eyes widened in surprise because she herself gasped aloud. This was the woman who Merlilla had claimed required ceremony carved in polished marble? Nynaeve was more than glad to take a chair. Thinking of all the hidden currents in Salidar, she wondered whether Tylin was trying to... To what? She had come to expect everyone who was not a close friend to try manipulating her. Elaine sat on the very front of her chair, and stiffly.
"I mean what I say," Tylin insisted. "Whatever you say, I will hear no insult."
From the way her fingers tapped the jeweled hilt at her waist, though, silence might be heard as one.
"I am not certain where to begin," Nynaeve said carefully. She did wish Elaine had not actually nodded at that. Elaine was supposed to know how to handle kings and queens. Why did she not say something?
"With why?" the queen said impatiently. "Why do 4 more Aes Sedai come to Ebudar from Salidar? It cannot be to outshine Elida's embassy. Teslin does not even call it that, and there are only her and Jolene." "You did not know?"
Falling back in her chair, laughing, she pressed the fingers of one hand to her lips.
"Do you know about the white cloaks?"
"Yes."
Her free hand made a slashing gesture, and her mirth began to subside in small ripples.
"That for white cloaks. But I must listen to all who court me. Lord Inquisitor Caradin, as well as the others."
"But why?" Nynaeve demanded.
"I am glad you don't like white cloaks, but in that case, why must you listen to a word Caradin says? The man's a butcher."
She knew she had made another mistake. The way Elaine suddenly seemed to be studying the broad white fireplace where the deep lintel was carved into towering waves told her that, even before the last vestige of Tylin's laughter snuffed out like a candle.
"You take me at my word," the queen said quietly. "I said let your tongue go free, and..."
Those dark eyes went to the floor tiles, and she seemed to be gathering herself. Nynaeve looked to Elaine, hoping for some hint of what she had done wrong, or better, how to make it right. But Elaine only gave her one sideways glance and the smallest shake of her head before returning to her study of the marble waves. Maybe she should avoid looking at Tylin, too? Yet the woman staring at the floor drew her eyes. With one hand, Tylin stroked the hilt of her curved dagger. With the other, fingered the smaller hilt nestled between her breasts. The marriage dagger told quite a lot about Tylin. Van Deen and Adelius had been more than willing to explain some things concerning Ebudar, usually those that made the city seem unsafe
for anyone not surrounded by a dozen armored guards. The white sheath meant the queen was widowed and did not intend to remarry. The four pearls and one fire drop set in the gold-wrapped hilt said she had borne four sons and one daughter. The white enameled setting of the fire drop and the red enameled of three of the pearls said only one son survived. All had been at least 16 when they died, and died in duels, or the settings would have been black. What must it be like to constantly carry a reminder of that sort? According to Van Deen, women saw a red or white setting as a source of pride, whether her stones were pearls and fire drops or colored glass. Van Deen said many Ebudari women removed the stones of their children past 16 who refused a duel and never acknowledged them again. At long last, Tylin raised her head. Her face was pleasant, and her hand left the dagger in her belt, but she continued to finger the marriage knife absently. "I want my son to follow me on the throne of the winds," she said mildly. "Beslan is your age, Elaine. This would be a matter of course in Andor, though he would have to be a woman." She actually grinned, in apparently genuine amusement. "Or in any other land save Murundi, where matters are much the same as here in Altara. In the 1,000 years since Ardor Hawkwing, only one house has held the throne for 5 generations, and Anarina's fall was so precipitous that to this day House Todand is a lapdog for anyone who wants them. No other house has ever had more than 2 rulers in succession. When my father took the throne, other houses had more of the city itself than Mitsubar. Had he stepped outside this palace without guards, he would have been sewn into a sack with rocks and tossed into the river. When he died, he gave me what I have now. Small compared to other rulers. A man riding fresh horses could reach the end of my writ in one day's hard ride. I have not been idle, though. When news of the Dragon Reborn came, I was certain I could hand on to Beslan 2x what I hold, and allies of a sort beyond that. The Stone of Tyr and Kalendor changed everything. Now I thank Padron Nile when he arranges for Ilion to take 100-mile swath of Altara instead of invading. I listen to Jaqim Caradhan, and I do not spit in his eye, however many Altarans died in the White Cloak War. I listen to Caradhan, and to Teslin, and to Merlilla, and I pray that I can pass something to my son instead of being found drowned in my bath on the day Beslan meets with an accident hunting. Tylin drew a long breath. The pleasant face remained, but an edge entered her voice. Now, I have stood bare-breasted in the fish market for you. Answer me mine. Why do I have the honor of 4 more Aes Sedai?
We are here to find a Tarangrial, Elaine said. And as Nynaeve stared in amazement, she told everything from Telairunriod to the dust in the room where the bowl was.
To make the weather right again would be a miraculous blessing, Tylin said slowly. But the quarter you describe sounds like the Rahad across the river. Even the civil guard steps lightly there. Forgive me, I understand that you are Aes Sedai, but in the Rahad you could have a knife in your back before you knew it. If the clothes are fine, they use a very narrow blade, so there is little blood. Perhaps you should leave this search to Van Deen and Adelius. I think they have had a few more years than you to see such places.
They told you about the bowl? Nynaeve said with a frown, but the queen shook her head.
Only that they were here to search for something. Aes Sedai never tell a word more than they absolutely must.
Once again that sudden grin flashed. It looked quite merry, though it did make her scars show as thin lines across her cheeks.
Until you two, at least. May the years not change you too much. I often wish Kavandra had not returned to the tower. I could talk with her in this way.
Standing, she motioned them to remain seated and glided across the room to tap a silver gong with an ivory mallet. It produced quite a loud chime for such a small cylinder.
I will send for cool mint tea and we will talk. You will tell me how I can help. If I send soldiers into the Rahad, it will be the wine riots all over again.
And perhaps you will even be able to explain why the bay is full of seafolk ships that neither dock nor trade. A goodly time passed over tea and talk, mostly about the dangers of the Rahad and what Tylin could not do, and Beslin was brought in, a soft-spoken youth who bowed respectfully and stared with beautiful black eyes that perhaps held relief when his mother said he could go. He certainly never doubted they were Aes Sedai. Finally, though, the pair of them were finding their way back to their apartment through the brightly painted corridors.
"So they mean to take over the search, too," Nynaeve murmured, glancing about to make sure none of the liveried servants was close enough to hear. Tylin had known too much about them too soon, and however she grinned, she had been upset over the Aes Sedai and Salidar.
"Elaine, do you think it was wise to tell her everything? She might decide the best way to make sure that boy gets the throne is to let us find the bowl and then tell Teslin." She remembered Teslin slightly, a red and an unpleasant woman.
"I know how my mother felt about Aes Sedai traveling about Andor, never letting her know what they were doing. I know how I would feel. Besides, I finally remembered being taught about that phrase, lean back on your knife and the rest. The only way to insult somebody who says that to you is to lie." Elaine's chin rose slightly. "As for Van Deen and Adelius, they only think they've taken over. This Rahad may be dangerous, but I cannot think it is any worse than Tanchico, and we won't have the Black Aja to worry about. I wager in 10 days we will have the bowl. I will know what makes Matz Turangrial do what it should not be able to do, and we will be on our way to join Egwene, with him knuckling his forehead as fast as Master Vannin, and Van Deen and Adelius will be left sitting here with Merlilla and Teslin, trying to puzzle out what happened." Nynaeve could not help it. She laughed out loud. A lanky serving man shifting a large vase of golden porcelain stared at her, and she stuck out her tongue at him. He nearly dropped the vase. "I won't take that wager, except about Matt. 10 days it is."